Lee swatted out the flames.
What my blasted mother Hera is doing now, she's a meddling fool playing a dangerous game. But she's right about one thing. You demigods have to unite. That's the only way to open Zeus's eyes. Convince the Olympians they must accept your help. And that's the only way to defeat what's coming. You're a big part of that, Leo.
The god's gaze seemed far away. Leo wondered if he really could split himself into different parts. Where else was he right now? Maybe his Greek side was fixing a car or going on a date, while his Roman side was watching a ball game and ordering pizza. Leo tried to imagine what it would feel like to have multiple personalities. He hoped it wasn't hereditary.
"Why me?" he asked.
And as soon as he said it, more questions flooded out.
"Why claim me now? Why not when I was 13, like you're supposed to? Or you could have claimed me at 7, before my mom died. Why didn't you find me earlier? Why didn't you warn me about this?"
Leo's hand burst into flames. Hephaestus regarded him sadly.
"Hardest part, boy. Letting my children walk their own paths. Interfering doesn't work. The fates make sure of that. As for the claiming, you were a special case, boy. The timing had to be right. I can't explain it much more, but..."
Leo's dream went fuzzy. Just for a moment, it turned into a rerun of Wheel of Fortune. Then Hephaestus came back into focus.
"Blast," he said. "I can't talk much longer. Zeus is sensing an illegal dream. He is lord of the air, after all, including the air waves. Just listen, boy. You have a role to play. Your friend Jason is right. Fire is a gift, not a curse. I don't give that blessing to just anyone. They'll never defeat the giants without you, much less the mistress they serve. She's worse than any god or titan."
"Who?" Leo demanded.
Hephaestus frowned, his image becoming fuzzier.
"I told you. Yes, I'm pretty sure I told you. Just be warned. Along the way, you're going to lose some friends and some valuable tools. But that isn't your fault, Leo. Nothing lasts forever. Not even the best machines. And everything can be reused."
"What do you mean? I don't like the sound of that."
"No, you shouldn't."
Hephaestus's image was barely visible now, just a blob in the static.
"Just watch out for..."
Leo's dream switched to Wheel of Fortune just as the wheel hit bankrupt and the audience said, "Aww." Then Leo snapped awake to Jason and Piper screaming. Chapter 30. Leo. They spiraled through the darkness in a free fall, still on the dragon's back, but Festus's hide was cold. His ruby eyes were dim.
"Not again," Leo yelled. "You can't fall again."
He could barely hold on. The wind stung his eyes, but he managed to pull open the panel on the dragon's neck. He toggled the switches. He tugged the wires. The dragon's wings flapped once, but Leo caught a whiff of burning bronze. The drive system was overloaded. Festus didn't have the strength to keep flying, and Leo couldn't get to the main control panel on the dragon's head, not in midair. He saw the lights of a city below them, just flashes in the dark as they plummeted in circles. They had only seconds before they crashed.
"Jason," he screamed, "take Piper and fly out of here."
"What?"
"We need to lighten the load. I might be able to reboot Festus, but he's carrying too much weight."
"What about you?" Piper cried. "If you can't reboot him..."
"I'll be fine," Leo yelled. "Just follow me to the ground. Go!"
Jason grabbed Piper around the waist. They both unbuckled their harnesses, and in a flash, they were gone, shooting into the air.
"Now," Leo said, Just you and me, Festus, and two heavy cages. You can do it, boy!
Leo talked to the dragon while he worked, falling at terminal velocity. He could see the city lights below him, getting closer and closer. He summoned fire in his hand so he could see what he was doing, but the wind kept extinguishing it. He pulled a wire that he thought connected the dragon's nerve center to its head, hoping for a little wake-up jolt. Festus groaned, metal creaking inside his neck. His eyes flickered weakly to life, and he spread his wings. Their fall turned into a steep glide.
"Good," Leo said. "Come on, big boy. Come on."
They were still flying in way too hot, and the ground was too close. Leo needed a place to land, fast. There was a big river. No, not good for a fire-breathing dragon. He'd never get Festus out from the bottom if he sank, especially in freezing temperatures. Then on the riverbanks, Leo spotted a white mansion with a huge, snowy lawn inside a tall brick perimeter fence, like some rich person's private compound, all of it blazing with light. A perfect landing field. He did his best to steer the dragon toward it, and Festus seemed to come back to life.
They could make this.
Then everything went wrong. As they approached the lawn, spotlights along the fence fixed on them, blinding Leo. He heard bursts like tracer fire, the sounds of metal being cut to shreds, and boom. Leo blacked out. When Leo came to his senses, Jason and Piper were leaning over him. He was lying in the snow, covered in mud and grease. He spit a clump of frozen grass out of his mouth.
"Where?" "Lie still."
Piper had tears in her eyes.
"You rolled pretty hard when Festus..." "Where is he?"
Leo sat up, but his head felt like it was floating. They'd landed inside the compound. Something had happened on the way in. Dunfire?
"Seriously, Leo," Jason said. "You could be hurt. You shouldn't..."
Leo pushed himself to his feet. Then he saw the wreckage. Festus must have dropped the big canary cages as he came over the fence, because they'd rolled in different directions and landed on their sides, perfectly undamaged. Festus hadn't been so lucky. The dragon had disintegrated. His limbs were scattered across the lawn. His tail hung on the fence. The main section of his body had plowed a trench 20 feet wide and 50 feet long across the mansion's yard before breaking apart. What remained of his hide was a charred, smoking pile of scraps. Only his neck and head were somewhat intact, resting across a row of frozen rose bushes like a pillow.
"No,"
Leo sobbed. He ran to the dragon's head and stroked its snout. The dragon's eyes flickered weakly. Oil leaked out of his ear.
"You can't go," Leo pleaded. "You're the best thing I ever fixed."
The dragon's head whirred its gears as if it were purring. Jason and Piper stood next to him, but Leo kept his eyes fixed on the dragon. He remembered what Hephaestus had said.
"That isn't your fault, Leo. Nothing lasts forever. Not even the best machines."
His dad had been trying to warn him.
"It's not fair," he said.
The dragon clicked. Long creak. Two short clicks. Creak. Creak. Almost like a pattern, triggering an old memory in Leo's mind. Leo realized Festus was trying to say something. He was using Morse code just like Leo's mom had taught him years ago. Leo listened more intently, translating the clicks into letters, a simple message repeating over and over.
"Yeah," Leo said. "I understand. I will. I promise."
The dragon's eyes went dark. Festus was gone. Leo cried. He wasn't even embarrassed. His friends stood on either side, patting his shoulders, saying comforting things. But the buzzing in Leo's ears drowned out their words. Finally, Jason said,
"I'm so sorry, man." "What did you promise Festus?"
Leo sniffled. He opened the dragon's head panel, just to be sure, but the control disc was cracked and burned beyond repair.
"Something my dad told me," Leo said. "Everything can be reused."
"Your dad talked to you?" Jason asked. "When was this?" Leo didn't answer. He worked at the dragon's neck hinges until the head was detached. It weighed about 100 pounds, but Leo managed to hold it in his arms. He looked up at the starry sky and said,
"Take him back to the bunker, Dad. Please, until I can reuse him. I've never asked you for anything."
The wind picked up, and the dragon's head floated out of Leo's arms like it weighed nothing. It flew into the sky and disappeared. Piper looked at him in amazement.
"He answered you?"
"I had a dream," Leo managed. "Tell you later."
He knew he owed his friends a better explanation, but Leo could barely speak. He felt like a broken machine himself, like someone had removed one little part of him, and now he'd never be complete. He might move, he might talk, he might keep going and do his job, but he'd always be off balance, never calibrated exactly right. Still, he couldn't afford to break down completely. Otherwise, Festus had died for nothing. He had to finish this quest. For his friends, for his mom, for his dragon. He looked around. The large white mansion glowed in the center of the grounds. Tall brick walls with lights and security cameras surrounded the perimeter. But now Leo could see, or rather sense, just how well those walls were defended.
"Where are we?" he asked. "I mean, what city?"
"Omaha, Nebraska," Piper said. "I saw a billboard as we flew in. But I don't know what this mansion is. We came in right behind you, but as you were landing, Leo, I swear it looked like... I don't know."
"Lasers," Leo said.
He picked up a piece of dragon wreckage and threw it toward the top of the fence. Immediately a turret popped up from the brick wall and a beam of pure heat incinerated the bronze plating to ashes.
Jason whistled. "Some defense system.
How are we even alive?"
"Festus," Leo said miserably. "He took the fire. The lasers sliced him to bits as he came in so they didn't focus on you. I led him into a death trap."
"You couldn't have known," Piper said. "He saved our lives again." "But what now?" Jason said. "The main gates are locked, and I'm guessing I can't fly us out of here without getting shot down." Leo looked up the walkway at the big white mansion.
"Since we can't go out, we'll have to go in."
Chapter 31. Jason. Jason would have died 5 times on the way to the front door if not for Leo. First, it was the motion-activated trapdoor on the sidewalk. Then the lasers on the steps, then the nerve gas dispenser on the porch railing, the pressure-sensitive poison spikes in the welcome mat, and, of course, the exploding doorbell. Leo deactivated all of them. It was like he could smell the traps, and he picked just the right tool out of his belt to disable them.
"You're amazing, man," Jason said.
Leo scowled as he examined the front door lock.
"Yeah. Amazing," he said. "Can't fix a dragon right, but I'm amazing."
"Hey, that wasn't your..."
"Front door's already unlocked," Leo announced.
Piper stared at the door in disbelief.
"It is? All those traps and the doors unlocked?"
Leo turned the knob. The door swung open easily. He stepped inside without hesitation. Before Jason could follow, Piper caught his arm.
He's going to need some time to get over Festus. Don't take it personally.
Yeah, Jason said. Yeah, okay. But still, he felt terrible. Back in Medea's store, he'd said some pretty harsh stuff to Leo. Stuff a friend shouldn't say. Not to mention the fact he'd almost skewered Leo with a sword. If it hadn't been for Piper, they'd both be dead. And Piper hadn't gotten out of that encounter easily either.
Piper, he said, I know I was in a daze back in Chicago, but that stuff about your dad, if he's in trouble, I want to help. I don't care if it's a trap or not.
Her eyes were always different colors, but now they looked shattered, as if she'd seen something she just couldn't cope with.
Jason, you don't know what you're saying. Please, don't make me feel worse. Come on, we should stick together.
She ducked inside.
Together, Jason said to himself.
Yeah, we're doing great with that. Jason's first impression of the house? Dark. From the echo of his footsteps, he could tell the entry hall was enormous, even bigger than Boreas's penthouse. But the only illumination came from the yard lights outside. A faint glow peeked through the breaks in the thick velvet curtains. The windows rose about 10 feet tall. Spaced between them along the walls were life-size metal statues. As Jason's eyes adjusted, he saw sofas arranged in a U in the middle of the room, with a central coffee table and one large chair at the far end. A massive chandelier glinted overhead. Along the back wall stood a row of closed doors.
"Where's the light switch?"
His voice echoed alarmingly through the room.
"Don't see one," Leo said.
"Fire?" Piper suggested. Leo held out his hand, but nothing happened.
"It's not working."
"Your fire is out?"
"Why?"
Piper asked.
"Well, if I knew that..."
"Okay, okay," she said.
"What do we do?
Explore?" Leo shook his head.
"After all those traps outside? Bad idea."
Jason's skin tingled. He hated being a demigod. Looking around, he didn't see a comfortable room to hang out in. He imagined vicious storm spirits lurking in the curtains, dragons under the carpet, a chandelier made of lethal ice shards, ready to impale them.
"Leo's right," he said. "We're not separating again. Not like in Detroit."
"Oh, thank you for reminding me of the Cyclopes," Piper's voice quavered.
"I needed that."
"It's a few hours until dawn," Jason guessed. "Too cold to wait outside. Let's bring the cages in and make camp in this room. Wait for daylight. Then we can decide what to do." Nobody offered a better idea, so they rolled in the cages with Coach Hedge and the storm spirits, then settled in. Thankfully, Leo didn't find any poison throw pillows or electric whoopee cushions on the sofas. Leo didn't seem in the mood to make more tacos. Besides, they had no fire, so they settled for cold rations. As Jason ate, he studied the metal statues along the walls. They looked like Greek gods or heroes. Maybe that was a good sign. Or maybe they were used for target practice. On the coffee table sat a tea service and a stack of glossy brochures, but Jason couldn't make out the words. The big chair at the other end of the table looked like a throne. None of them tried to sit in it. The canary cages didn't make the place any less creepy. The venti kept churning in their prison, hissing and spinning, and Jason got the uncomfortable feeling they were watching him. He could sense their hatred for the children of Zeus, the lord of the sky who'd ordered Aeolus to imprison their kind. The venti would like nothing better than to tear Jason apart. As for Coach Hedge, he was still frozen mid-shout, his cudgel raised. Leo was working on the cage, trying to open it with various tools, but the lock seemed to be giving him a hard time. Jason decided not to sit next to him in case Hedge suddenly unfroze and went into ninja goat mode.
Despite how wired he felt, once his stomach was full, Jason started to nod off. The couches were a little too comfortable. A lot better than a dragon's back. And he'd taken the last two watches while his friends slept. He was exhausted. Piper had already curled up on the other sofa. Jason wondered if she was really asleep or dodging a conversation about her dad. Whatever Medea had meant in Chicago about Piper getting her dad back if she cooperated, it didn't sound good. If Piper had risked her own dad to save them, that made Jason feel even guiltier. And they were running out of time. If Jason had his days straight, this was early morning of December 20, which meant tomorrow was the winter solstice.
"Get some sleep," Leo said, still working on the locked cage. "It's your turn."
Jason took a deep breath. "Leo, I'm sorry about that stuff I said in Chicago. That wasn't me. You're not annoying, and you do take stuff seriously, especially your work. I wish I could do half the things you can do." Leo lowered his screwdriver. He looked at the ceiling and shook his head like, "What am I gonna do with this guy?"
"I try very hard to be annoying," Leo said. "Don't insult my ability to annoy. And how am I supposed to resent you if you go apologizing? I'm a lowly mechanic. You're like the prince of the sky, son of the lord of the universe. I'm supposed to resent you."
"Lord of the universe?"
"Sure, you're all bam, lightning man, and watch me fly. I am the eagle that soars."
"Shut up, Valdez." Leo managed a little smile.
"Yeah, see, I do annoy you.
I apologize for apologizing."
"Thank you."
He went back to work, but the tension had eased between them. Leo still looked sad and exhausted, just not quite so angry.
"Go to sleep, Jason," he ordered. "It's gonna take a few hours to get this goat man free. Then I still gotta figure out how to make the winds a smaller holding cell, 'cause I am not lugging that canary cage to California."
"You did fix Festus, you know," Jason said. "You gave him a purpose again. I think this quest was the high point of his life." Jason was afraid he'd blown it and made Leo mad again, but Leo just sighed.
"I hope," he said. "Now sleep, man. I want some time without you organic life forms."
Jason wasn't quite sure what that meant, but he didn't argue. He closed his eyes and had a long, blissfully dreamless sleep. He only woke when the yelling started. Jason leapt to his feet. He wasn't sure what was more jarring, the full sunlight that now bathed the room, or the screaming satyr.
"Coach is awake," Leo said,
which was kind of unnecessary. Gleason Hedge was capering around on his furry hindquarters, swinging his club and yelling, "Die!" as he smashed the tea set, whacked the sofas, and charged at the throne.
"Coach!" Jason yelled.
Hedge turned, breathing hard. His eyes were so wild, Jason was afraid he might attack. The satyr was still wearing his orange polo shirt and his coach's whistle, but his horns were clearly visible above his curly hair, and his beefy hindquarters were definitely all goat. Could you call a goat beefy? Jason put the thought aside.
"You're the new kid," Hedge said, lowering his club. "Jason."
He looked at Leo, then Piper, who'd apparently also just woken up. Her hair looked like it had become a nest for a friendly hamster.
"Valdez! McLean," the coach said. "What's going on?" "We were at the Grand Canyon. The Anemoi Thueli were attacking and..."
He zeroed in on the storm spirit cage, and his eyes went back to DEFCON 1.
"Die!"
"Whoa, coach!"
Leo stepped in his path, which was pretty brave, even though Hedge was 6 inches shorter.
"It's okay. They're locked up. We just sprang you from the other cage."
"Cage? Cage? What's going on? Just because I'm a satyr doesn't mean I can't have you doing plank push-ups, Valdez.
Jason cleared his throat. Coach Gleason, whatever you want us to call you, you saved us at the Grand Canyon. You were totally brave.
Of course I was.
The extraction team came and took us to Camp Half-Blood. We thought we'd lost you. Then we got word the storm spirits had taken you back to their, operator, Medea.
That witch! Wait, that's impossible. She's mortal. She's dead.
Yeah, well, Leo said, somehow she got not dead anymore.
Hedge nodded, his eyes narrowing.
So, you were sent on a dangerous quest to rescue me. Excellent.
Piper got to her feet, holding out her hands so Coach Hedge wouldn't attack her.
Actually, Glee, can I still call you Coach Hedge? Gleason seems wrong. We're on a quest for something else. We kind of found you by accident.
Oh.
The coach's spirits seemed to deflate, but only for a second. Then his eyes lit up again.
Well, there are no accidents, not on quests. This was meant to happen. So, this is the witch's lair, eh? Why is everything gold?
Gold? Jason looked around. From the way Leo and Piper caught their breath, he guessed they hadn't noticed yet either. The room was full of gold. The statues the tea-set Hedge had smashed, the chair that was definitely a throne, even the curtains, which seemed to have opened by themselves at daybreak, appeared to be woven of gold fiber.
Nice, Leo said. No wonder they got so much security. This isn't, Piper stammered, this isn't Medea's place, Coach. It's some rich person's mansion in Omaha. We got away from Medea and crash-landed here.
It's destiny, cupcakes, Hedge insisted. I meant to protect you. What's the quest?
Before Jason could decide if he wanted to explain or just shove Coach Hedge back into his cage, a door opened at the far end of the room. A pudgy man in a white bathrobe stepped out with a golden toothbrush in his mouth. He had a white beard and one of those long, old-fashioned sleeping caps pressed down over his white hair. He froze when he saw them, and the toothbrush fell out of his mouth. He glanced into the room behind him and called,
"Son? Lit? Come out here, please. There are strange people in the throne room."
Coach Hedge did the obvious thing. He raised his club and shouted,
"Die!"
Chapter 32. Jason. It took all three of them to hold back the satyr.
"Whoa, Coach," Jason said. "Bring it down a few notches."
A younger man charged into the room. Jason guessed he must be Lit, the old guy's son. He was dressed in pajama pants with a sleeveless T-shirt that said Cornhuskers, and he held a sword that looked like it could husk a lot of things besides corn. His ripped arms were covered in scars, and his face, framed by curly dark hair, would have been handsome if it wasn't also sliced up. Lit immediately zeroed in on Jason like he was the biggest threat and stalked toward him, swinging his sword overhead.
"Hold on!"
Piper stepped forward, trying for her best calming voice.
"This is just a misunderstanding. Everything's fine."
Lit stopped in his tracks, but he still looked wary. It didn't help that Hedge was screaming,
"I'll get them! Don't worry!"
"Coach," Jason pleaded, "they may be friendly. Besides, we're trespassing in their house."
"Thank you," said the old man in the bathrobe. "Now, who are you, and why are you here?"
"Let's all put our weapons down," Piper said. "Coach, you first."
Hedge clenched his jaw.
Just one thwack?
No, Piper said.
What about a compromise? I'll kill them first, and if it turns out they were friendly, I'll apologize.
No, Piper insisted.
Ugh.
Coach Hedge lowered his club. Piper gave Lit a friendly, sorry about that, smile. Even with her hair messed up and wearing two-day-old clothes, she looked extremely cute, and Jason felt a little jealous she was giving Lit that smile. Lit huffed and sheathed his sword.
You speak well, girl. Fortunately for your friends, or I would have run them through.
Appreciate it, Leo said. I try not to get run through before lunchtime.
The old man in the bathrobe sighed, kicking the teapot that Coach Hedge had smashed.
Well, since you're here, please sit down.
Lit frowned.
Your Majesty.
No, no, it's fine, Lit, the old man said.
New land, new customs.
They may sit in my presence. After all, they've seen me in my nightclothes. No sense observing formalities. He did his best to smile, though it looked a little forced.
Welcome to my humble home.
I am King Midas.
Midas? Impossible, said Coach Hedge. He died.
They were sitting on the sofas now, while the king reclined on his throne. Tricky to do that in a bathrobe, and Jason kept worrying the old guy would forget and uncross his legs. Hopefully he was wearing golden boxers under there. Lit stood behind the throne, both hands on his sword, glancing at Piper and flexing his muscular arms just to be annoying. Jason wondered if he looked that ripped holding a sword. Sadly, he doubted it. Piper sat forward.
What our satyr friend means, Your Majesty, is that you're the second mortal we've met who should be, sorry, dead. King Midas lived thousands of years ago.
Interesting.
The king gazed out the windows at the brilliant blue skies and the winter sunlight. In the distance, downtown Omaha looked like a cluster of children's blocks, way too clean and small for a regular city.
You know, the king said, I think I was a bit dead for a while. It's strange. Seems like a dream, doesn't it, Lit?
A very long dream, Your Majesty.
And yet, now we're here. I'm enjoying myself very much. I like being alive better.
But how? Piper asked. You didn't happen to have a patron?
Midas hesitated, but there was a sly twinkle in his eyes.
Does it matter, my dear?
We could kill them again, Hedge suggested.
Coach? Not helping, Jason said. Why don't you go outside and stand guard?
Leo coughed. Is that safe? They've got some serious security.
Oh, yes, the king said. Sorry about that.
But it's lovely stuff, isn't it?
Amazing what gold can still buy. Such excellent toys you have in this country.
He fished a remote control out of his bathrobe pocket and pressed a few buttons. A passcode, Jason guessed.
There, Midas said. Safe to go out now.
Coach Hedge grunted.
Fine, but if you need me.
He winked at Jason meaningfully. Then he pointed at himself, pointed two fingers at their hosts, and sliced a finger across his throat. Very subtle sign language.
Yeah, thanks, Jason said.
After the satyr left, Piper tried another diplomatic smile.
So, you don't know how you got here?
Oh, well, yes, sort of, the king said.
He frowned at Lit.
Why did we pick Omaha again? I know it wasn't the weather.
The oracle, Lit said.
Yes, I was told there was an oracle in Omaha.
The king shrugged.
Apparently I was mistaken. But this is a rather nice house, isn't it?
Lit. It's short for Laterces, by the way. Horrible name, but his mother insisted.
Lit has plenty of wide-open space to practice his sword play. He has quite a reputation for that. They called him the Reaper of Men back in the old days.
Oh, Piper tried to sound enthusiastic. How nice.
Lit's smile was more of a cruel sneer. Jason was now 100% sure he didn't like this guy, and he was starting to regret sending Hedge outside.
So, Jason said, all this gold.
The king's eyes lit up.
Are you here for gold, my boy? Please, take a brochure.
Jason looked at the brochures on the coffee table. The title said, Gold, Invest for Eternity.
You sell gold?
No, no, the king said. I make it. In uncertain times like these, gold is the wisest investment, don't you think? Governments fall, the dead rise, giants attack Olympus, but gold retains its value.
Leo frowned.
I've seen that commercial.
Oh, don't be fooled by cheap imitators, the king said. I assure you, I can beat any price for a serious investor. I can make a wide assortment of gold items at a moment's notice.
But, Piper shook her head in confusion, Your Majesty, you gave up the golden touch, didn't you?
The king looked astonished.
Gave it up?
Yes, Piper said. You got it from some god.
Dionysus, the king agreed. I'd rescued one of his satyrs, and in return, the god granted me one wish. I chose the golden touch.
But you accidentally turned your own daughter to gold, Piper remembered. And you realized how greedy you'd been, so you repented.
Repented?
King Midas looked at Lit incredulously. You see, son, you're away for a few thousand years and the story gets twisted all around. My dear girl, did those stories ever say I'd lost my magic touch?
Well, I guess not. They just said you learned how to reverse it with running water and you brought your daughter back to life.
That's all true. Sometimes I still have to reverse my touch.
There's no running water in the house because I don't want accidents.
He gestured to his statues.
But we chose to live next to a river just in case. Occasionally, I'll forget and pat Lit on the back.
Lit retreated a few steps.
I hate that.
I told you I was sorry, son. At any rate, gold is wonderful. Why would I give it up?
Well, Piper looked truly lost now. Isn't that the point of the story, that you learned your lesson?
Midas laughed.
My dear, may I see your backpack for a moment? Toss it here.
Piper hesitated, but she wasn't eager to offend the king. She dumped everything out of the pack and tossed it to Midas. As soon as he caught it, the pack turned to gold, like frost spreading across the fabric. It still looked flexible and soft, but definitely gold. The king tossed it back.
As you see, I can still turn anything to gold, Midas said. That pack is magic now as well. Go ahead, put your little storm spirit enemies in there.
Seriously?
Leo was suddenly interested. He took the bag from Piper and held it up to the cage. As soon as he unzipped the backpack, the winds stirred and howled in protest. The cage bars shuddered, the door of the prison flew open, and the winds got vacuumed straight into the pack. Leo zipped it shut and grinned.
Gotta admit, that's cool.
You see, Midas said, my golden touch, a curse? Please, I didn't learn any lesson, And life isn't a story, girl. Honestly, my daughter Zoe was much more pleasant as a gold statue.
She talked a lot, Lit offered.
Exactly. And so I turned her back to gold, Midas pointed. There in the corner was a golden statue of a girl with a shocked expression, as if she were thinking, Dad!
That's horrible, Piper said.
Nonsense. She doesn't mind. Besides, if I'd learned my lesson, would I have gotten these?
Midas pulled off his oversized sleeping cap, and Jason didn't know whether to laugh or get sick. Midas had long, fuzzy gray ears sticking up from his white hair. Like Bugs Bunny's, but they weren't rabbit ears. They were donkey ears.
Oh, wow, Leo said. I didn't need to see that.
Terrible, isn't it? Midas sighed. A few years after the Golden Touch incident, I judged a music contest between Apollo and Pan, and I declared Pan the winner. Apollo, sore loser, said I must have the ears of an ass, and voila! This was my reward for being truthful. I tried to keep them a secret. Only my barber knew, but he couldn't help blabbing. Midas pointed out another gold statue, a bald man in a toga holding a pair of shears. That's him. He won't be telling anyone's secrets again.
The king smiled. Suddenly he didn't strike Jason as a harmless old man in a bathrobe. His eyes had a merry glow to them, the look of a madman who knew he was mad, accepted his madness, and enjoyed it.
Yes. Gold has many uses. I think that must be why I was brought back. Eh, Lit? To bankroll our patron.
Lit nodded.
That and my good sword arm.
Jason glanced at his friends. Suddenly the air in the room seemed much colder.
So you do have a patron, Jason said. You work for the Giants.
King Midas waved his hand dismissively.
Well, I don't care for giants myself, of course.
But even supernatural armies need to get paid. I do owe my patron a great debt. I tried to explain that to the last group that came through, but they were very unfriendly. Wouldn't cooperate at all.
Jason slipped his hand into his pocket and grabbed his gold coin. The last group?
Hunters. Lit snarled. Blasted girls from Artemis.
Jason felt a spark of electricity, a literal spark, travel down his spine. He caught a whiff of electrical fire like he'd just melted some of the springs in the sofa. His sister had been here.
When? He demanded. What happened?
Lit shrugged.
Few days ago. I didn't get to kill them, unfortunately. They were looking for some evil wolves or something. Said they were following a trail, heading west. Missing demigod. I don't recall.
Percy Jackson, Jason thought. Annabeth had mentioned the hunters were looking for him, and in Jason's dream of the burned-out house in the Redwoods, he'd heard enemy wolves baying. Hera had called them her keepers. It had to be connected somehow.
Midas scratched his donkey ears. Very unpleasant young ladies, those hunters, he recalled. They absolutely refused to be turned into gold. Much of the security system outside I installed to keep that sort of thing from happening again, you know. I don't have time for those who aren't serious investors.
Jason stood warily and glanced at his friends. They got the message.
Well, Piper said, managing a smile, it's been a great visit. Welcome back to life. Thanks for the gold bag.
Oh, but you can't leave, Midas said. I know you're not serious investors, but that's all right. I have to rebuild my collection.
Lit was smiling cruelly. The king rose, and Leo and Piper moved away from him.
"Don't worry," the king assured them. "You don't have to be turned to gold. I give all my guests a choice. Join my collection, or die at the hands of Laterces."
"Really, it's good either way."
Piper tried to use her charm speak.
"Your Majesty, you can't..."
Quicker than an old man should have been able to move, Midas lashed out and grabbed her wrist.
"No!"
Jason yelled. But a frost of gold spread over Piper, and in a heartbeat she was a glittering statue. Leo tried to summon fire, but he'd forgotten his power wasn't working. Midas touched his hand, and Leo transformed into solid metal. Jason was so horrified he couldn't move. His friends, just gone. And he hadn't been able to stop it. Midas smiled apologetically.
"Gold trumps fire, I'm afraid."
He waved around him at all the gold curtains and furniture.
"In this room, my power dampens all others. Fire, even charms speak, which leaves me only one more trophy to collect."
"Hedge!" Jason yelled. "Need help in here!"
For once, the satyr didn't charge in. Jason wondered if the lasers had gotten him, or if he was sitting at the bottom of a trap pit. Midas chuckled.
"No goat to the rescue. Sad. But don't worry, my boy. It's really not painful. Lit can tell you."
Jason fixed on an idea. "I choose combat. You said I could choose to fight Lit instead." Midas looked mildly disappointed, but he shrugged.
"I said you could die fighting Lit. But of course, if you wish."
The king backed away, and Lit raised his sword.
"I'm going to enjoy this," Lit said. "I am the Reaper of Men."
"Come on, Cornhusker." Jason summoned his own weapon. This time it came up as a javelin, and Jason was glad for the extra length.
"Oh, gold weapon," Midas said. "Very nice."
Lit charged. The guy was fast. He slashed and sliced, and Jason could barely dodge the strikes, but his mind went into a different mode, analyzing patterns, learning Lit's style, which was all offense, no defense. Jason countered, sidestepped, and blocked. Lit seemed surprised to find him still alive.
"What is that style?" Lit growled. "You don't fight like a Greek."
"Legion training," Jason said, though he wasn't sure how he knew that. "It's Roman."
"Roman?"
Lit struck again, and Jason deflected his blade.
"What is Roman?"
"Newsflash," Jason said. "While you were dead, Rome defeated Greece, created the greatest empire of all time."
"Impossible," Lit said.
"Never even heard of them."
Jason spun on one heel, smacked Lit in the chest with the butt of his javelin, and sent him toppling into Midas's throne.
"Oh dear," Midas said. "Lit?"
"I'm fine," Lit growled.
"You'd better help him up," Jason said. Lit cried,
"Dad, no!"
Too late. Midas put his hand on his son's shoulder, and suddenly a very angry-looking gold statue was sitting on Midas's throne.
"Curses!" Midas wailed.
"That was a naughty trick, demigod. I'll get you for that."
He patted Lit's golden shoulder.
"Don't worry, son. I'll get you down to the river right after I collect this prize."
Midas raced forward. Jason dodged, but the old man was fast, too. Jason kicked the coffee table into the old man's legs and knocked him over, but Midas wouldn't stay down for long. Then Jason glanced at Piper's golden statue. Anger washed over him. He was the son of Zeus. He could not fail his friends. He felt a tugging sensation in his gut, and the air pressure dropped so rapidly that his ears popped. Midas must have felt it too, because he stumbled to his feet and grabbed his donkey ears.
"Ow! What are you doing?" he demanded. "My power is supreme here."
Thunder rumbled. Outside, the sky turned black.
"You know another good use for gold?" Jason said. Midas raised his eyebrows, suddenly excited.
"Yes?"
"It's an excellent conductor of electricity." Jason raised his javelin, and the ceiling exploded. A lightning bolt ripped through the roof like it was an eggshell, connected with the tip of Jason's spear, and sent out arcs of energy that blasted the sofas to shreds. Chunks of ceiling plaster crashed down. The chandelier groaned and snapped off its chain, and Midas screamed as it pinned him to the floor. The glass immediately turned into gold. When the rumbling stopped, freezing rain poured into the building. Midas cursed in ancient Greek, thoroughly pinned under his chandelier. The rain soaked everything, turning the gold chandelier back to glass. Piper and Leo were slowly changing too, along with the other statues in the room. Then the front door burst open, and Coach Hedge charged in, club ready. His mouth was covered with dirt, snow, and grass.
"What'd I miss?" he asked.
"Where were you?" Jason demanded. His head was spinning from summoning the lightning bolt, and it was all he could do to keep from passing out.
"I was screaming for help."
Hedge belched.
"Getting a snack. Sorry. Who needs killing?"
"No one now," Jason said. "Just grab Leo. I'll get Piper."
"Don't leave me like this,"
Midas wailed. All around him, the statues of his victims were turning to flesh. His daughter, his barber, and a whole lot of angry-looking guys with swords. Jason grabbed Piper's golden bag and his own supplies. Then he threw a rug over the golden statue of Lit on the throne. Hopefully that would keep the Reaper of Men from turning back to flesh, at least until after Midas's victims did.
"Let's get out of here," Jason told Hedge.
"I think these guys will want some quality time with Midas." Chapter 33 Piper. Piper woke up cold and shivering. She'd had the worst dream about an old guy with donkey ears chasing her around and shouting, "You're it!"
"Oh, God!" Her teeth chattered. "He turned me to gold!"
"You're okay now." Jason leaned over and tucked a warm blanket around her, but she still felt as cold as a Boread. She blinked, trying to figure out where they were. Next to her, a campfire blazed, turning the air sharp with smoke. Firelight flickered against rock walls. They were in a shallow cave, but it didn't offer much protection. Outside, the wind howled. Snow blew sideways. It might have been day or night. The storm made it too dark to tell.
Leo?
Piper managed.
"Present and ungoldified."
Leo was also wrapped in blankets. He didn't look great, but better than Piper felt.
"I got the precious metal treatment too," he said. "But I came out of it faster. Don't know why. We had to dunk you in the river to get you back completely. Tried to dry you off, but it's really, really cold."
"You've got hypothermia," Jason said. "We risked as much nectar as we could. Coach Hedge did a little nature magic."
"Sports medicine."
The coach's ugly face loomed over her.
"Kind of a hobby of mine. Your breath might smell like wild mushrooms and Gatorade for a few days, but it'll pass. You probably won't die. Probably."
"Thanks," Piper said weakly. "How did you beat Midas?"
Jason told her the story, putting most of it down to luck. The coach snorted.
"Kid's being modest. You should have seen him. Hey-ya! Slice! Boom with the lightning!"
"Coach, you didn't even see it," Jason said. "You were outside eating the lawn." But the satyr was just warming up.
Then I came in with my club, and we dominated that room. Afterward, I told him, "Kid, I'm proud of you. If you could just work on your upper body strength."
"Coach," said Jason.
"Yeah."
"Shut up, please."
"Sure."
The coach sat down at the fire and started chewing his cudgel. Jason put his hand on Piper's forehead and checked her temperature. "Leo, can you stoke the fire?"
"On it."
Leo summoned a baseball-sized clump of flames and lobbed it into the campfire.
"Do I look that bad?"
Piper shivered.
"Nah,"
Jason said.
"You're a terrible liar," she said. "Where are we?"
"Pike's Peak," Jason said. "Colorado."
"But that's, what, 500 miles from Omaha?"
"Something like that," Jason agreed. "I harnessed the storm spirits to bring us this far. They didn't like it. Went a little faster than I wanted. Almost crashed us into the mountainside before I could get them back in the bag. I'm not going to be trying that again."
"Why are we here?"
Leo sniffed.
"That's what I asked him."
Jason gazed into the storm as if watching for something. That glittery wind trail we saw yesterday? It was still in the sky, though it had faded a lot. I followed it until I couldn't see it anymore. Then, honestly, I'm not sure. I just felt like this was the right place to stop.
"Course it is!"
Coach Hedge spit out some cudgel splinters.
"Helis's floating palace should be anchored above us, right at the peak. This is one of his favorite spots to dock."
"Maybe that was it." Jason knit his eyebrows. "I don't know. Something else, too."
"The hunters were heading west," Piper remembered. "Do you think they're around here?"
Jason rubbed his forearm as if the tattoos were bothering him. "I don't see how anyone could survive on the mountain right now. The storm's pretty bad. It's already the evening before the solstice, but we didn't have much choice except to wait out the storm here. We had to give you some time to rest before we tried moving." He didn't need to convince her. The wind howling outside the cave scared her, and she couldn't stop shivering.
"We have to get you warm."
Jason sat next to her and held out his arms a little awkwardly.
You mind if I... I suppose."
She tried to sound nonchalant. He put his arms around her and held her. They scooted closer to the fire. Coach Hedge chewed on his club and spit splinters into the fire. Leo broke out some cooking supplies and started frying burger patties on an iron skillet.
"So, guys, long as you're cuddled up for story time, something I've been meaning to tell you. On the way to Omaha, I had this dream. Kinda hard to understand with the static and the Wheel of Fortune breaking in."
"Wheel of Fortune?" Piper assumed Leo was kidding, but when he looked up from his burgers, his expression was deadly serious.
"The thing is," he said, "my dad, Hephaestus, talked to me."
Leo told them about his dream. In the firelight, with the wind howling, the story was even creepier. Piper could imagine the static-filled voice of the god warning about giants who were the sons of Tartarus, and about Leo losing some friends along the way. She tried to concentrate on something good. Jason's arms around her, the warmth slowly spreading into her body. But she was terrified.
"I don't understand. If demigods and gods have to work together to kill the giants, why would the gods stay silent? If they need us..."
"Ha!" said Coach Hedge. "The gods hate needing humans. They like to be needed by humans, but not the other way around. Things will have to get a whole lot worse before Zeus admits he made a mistake closing Olympus."
"Coach," Piper said, "that was almost an intelligent comment." Hedge huffed.
"What? I'm intelligent? I'm not surprised you cupcakes haven't heard of the giant war. The gods don't like to talk about it. Bad PR to admit you needed mortals to help beat an enemy. That's just embarrassing."
There's more, though, Jason said. When I dreamed about Hera in her cage, she said Zeus.